evening, good evening, good evening. I'm doing this at a stretch at the moment, so it might fade out funnily. Anyway, right, tonight we're in with the podcast. It's an interesting one where we discuss the Egyptian James McLean. Right, so up ahead of us, we're going to talk about the matches that we're on. We're going to have a look at the impact of Klopp and the discussion around whether he's a fraud or not. We're also looking at Karius, and we are discussing rail standing, rail safe seating, safe standing. What are we talking about? Also the Klopp out fan and the works. So I think it's a manic hour or so, and there'll be a bit of video and stuff because it broke. That's about it. So without further ado, here comes the podcast, and I can't even put this intro bit in because I didn't record it on video, so I don't know how it's going to work. Anyway, so on we go, and here's the cut that you never know. Anyway, first things up, lads, let's start at the matches. There was football matches to talk about, and I know it's pre-season friendlies and we shouldn't really write anything into the matches themselves, but from the notes I've kept here on the phone around the matches themselves, I've got a few pointers to point out. First things first, lads, Mohamed Salah, arguably the greatest footballer in the world at this moment in time. Dave Hartree.
Yeah, I've thought that for a number of years now. Yeah, okay. I think yes, Mo Salah probably going to be the greatest Liverpool player.
The fact he called him Mo as well just smells of familiarity.
It is.
Yeah. He's kind of followed studiously from wherever he was for the last 2 years.
I'm not too sure either.
And when you followed him, was it hard because he is quite quick around?
I keep slowing down the tapes.
To see what he did.
The dubstep on YouTube. Pounding.
So come here, all seriousness aside, he is one of these players who looks fairly exciting, isn't he?
Yeah, no, he's good, yeah. Like, and the thing as well is about him is I think that we look at him playing for the club teams, but he has been the backbone of an Egypt team that have been quite handy in Africa. So
Egypt have a team?
They do, yeah.
They won the AFCON not too long ago, actually.
They won the third African Nations Cup in 2016.
But he's been pretty decent for them, like, and in kind of the same way as James McLean is a bit like mad for Ireland and always puts in a shift or whatever, but like, there's a lot of pressure on him to kind of dig things out. I think Mo Salah is similar enough in that way that he can kind of, like, he's not going to get daunted, I don't think. I think he's grown a lot since when he left Chelsea. I think he's grown into the pressure and expectation of that. I think he will this time in the Premier League. He should definitely
flourish.
It's like water off a duck's back, isn't
so
it?
So yeah. You have just said that Mo Salah is essentially the Egyptian James McLean.
Yeah.
that's the name of the podcast right there.
Mike, so that's it for the night, folks. Take that thought into the season.
Just the exact same.
But the impressive thing was, we believed you when you were saying it, so fair play. Yeah.
No, but I understand what you're saying. No, that when he's been the go-to man for that team for a long time, for the Egypt team, and like, he's come in.
Somebody pretended he knows.
No, out straight now. But he has been, like, he's obviously the main man, he's the number 10, he's the man, do you know that way? Mm. But he just looks like a pain in the bollocks, doesn't he? He's another man, eh? Like, teams are...
For other teams now. Obviously for his own team, the smiley, happy face, saying, like, he looks like a great lad to have around.
You've seen the Palace game, like, Dan kicked him up in the air, and then your man Ward was like, Jesus Christ. And you could see the ref going, like, lads, it's only pre-season, relax, but... Yeah. He's going to be a menace.
I was looking at it a couple of times when he first got the ball. The first thing I noticed was Henderson, as soon as he gets the ball in the middle, his head is up and he's looking for the ping. You can see that that's the outlet ball. And that's obviously because we've only got one of the pacey wingers playing. If we have Mane one side, Salah the other, Henderson's ability to find them, both of them are comfortable going down either flank. You could see with Salah, he can square you up and make you think that he's going to go to the touchline and get past you, or he kept drifting inside and running across the box, which was so dangerous. I think he's been
really playing
impressive.
With a massive amount of confidence at the minute, I think, as well, because of the big chase from Liverpool, and listen, Liverpool are a big club, there's no point in doubt. So he's playing with a lot of confidence, and like you were saying, he can go outside, he can go touchline, he can come back, and he's trusting himself to do these things at the minute. And I think he's going to hit he's on the crest of a wave there at the minute, so I think he's going to have a real big impact at the start of the season. But I suppose the intriguing part is, when Mane is fit and he's fit and everybody's fit, what happens?
I can see one of them playing central in some games. I don't think it's going to be a case of it's always going to be Firmino and them two either side. I think Klopp is obsessed with this, you know, this front line that doesn't have a static position because it's so difficult to mark.
Then all three
of them are just going to be interchanging. And then you've got Phil looking to break through and appear in little pockets. Lallana doing the same. You've just got six players buzzing around, no fixed position. And it would be a nightmare to mark.
I tell you what it'd be a nightmare for if you're a fucking centre half, because the rest of everyone else is a forward. Yeah, literally exactly. Everyone.
Who'd you go with? Just that, if you follow him, he's going to turn you in his way, and then you're out of position. You've got three or four runs.
In the final of the Premier League
trophy
on Golden Collar, Asia Trophy, wasn't it? We effectively went with a front six. When I say that, they were all predominantly attack-minded players. They may not have been playing in those positions, but their first decision they make was to go forward and not look behind them to see if I'm covered, yeah?
We're mad. It's great.
So we went all out and it was really balls-out stuff, wasn't it? But I just think...
But is that not an interesting...
No matter who we buy at centre-half, they're going to be exposed.
But let me...
Yeah, that's the curse of the Liverpool centre-back.
But is that not an interesting tactical variation in what we did last year? Because Klopp has played Leicester now a couple of times. Every time we've played Leicester, they've looked to play us under counter-attack, right? So he's thought to himself, well, these aren't going to come out against us. Even in pre-season, they're trying to set up their system and play their way of football. They've got Vardy, they're going to try to hit it over the top. So I don't need to worry about trying to control the midfield. I'm going to have the ball.
Yeah.
So why don't I put all my most dangerous players on the pitch to try break down a strong defensive unit who want to play in the break? And then similarly, he has Moreno on the pitch. He has Trent Alexander, who are quick. And I know everyone in Moreno, brain dead, blah, blah, blah. But the idea is that he's got the pace to do those covering runs when they try to hit over the top.
It's interesting you say that, because I've seen a video, I don't know if you saw it, that Melissa Reddy tweeted out of the training session that they were doing, and they were literally just working on like corners coming into the box and then the lads just breaking at ridiculous speed, winning the ball back and breaking, and they were just
defending from corners.
Yeah, drilling it over and over and over again, these quick breaks. And you can see what he's planning next year. As soon as we get that ball, those lads are gone.
Going back to what Nilo said though, like, what do you do when everyone's fit? Isn't it about time you had that problem?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like that.
It's
unbelievable, like that option we had, because when Mane went out of team last year, we died. Now, that being said, a few other players are missing, but even Klopp has come out and said when he went, we had no pace.
Yeah.
We have that now. Yeah. We have it in spades now with Mane and Salah.
And the irony of it, I suppose, what will work in favour of Daniel Sturridge in particular is the irony of it that we have so many options out. You can keep him fit.
Yeah.
Not forced to use him, bring him back before he's nearly fit. You can kind of bring him, play him when you really think you're going to need him, rather than waiting on him. I think it's going to be beneficial to him. He's only going to probably have to play 15 games.
Been 2 games, and we've looked fairly sharp for our first 2 games. But the thing that is kind of irking me and scaring me a little bit is that the question is still, Jesus, if we keep Henderson fit, how good would we be? The fact that we're still kind of relying on that.
Okay, I want to go there, because Jamie, me and you have had many discussions around this. Like you, like for me anyway, and I said it to you, Shawnee, as well in the group, and I keep saying that everyone is now thinking Hendo Chan.
Because Twitter likes camps though, and it doesn't have to be that way.
Away from that, what I'm trying to say is, like, everyone is praising Jordan Henderson, but it's the same thing as I said to you last year. It's for me, as a top quality manager, a top quality team has horses for courses. Yeah. When we have to face big, powerful midfields who are going to press and stretch and push onto teams and try not so much dominate possession, but dominate you physically, right? Yep. Jordan Henderson isn't the man you want to be running your midfield. He's great to be there when we have the time on the ball. Exactly the Leicester game, where he's going to be able to pick the ball up, have the time and space to use it, to be able to get it, use his passing range and move it around. But in those more physical games, which there are an awful lot in the Premier League, Emre Can is their steam train who just knocks other teams off the ball. And he did it. Like the best example of the two of them working in brilliant tandem last year was the Chelsea game in the first part of the season. Where we knocked Chelsea over.
I think you're actually dead right to a degree. And it's kind of frustrating that it was kind of similar with the Lovren and Sacco thing, is it become you have to be either or. And I don't think it's a case of that. I think we're building a squad now where it's going to depend on the opposition that you're playing. So if you're playing at home against a team that sits in like Burnley, for me, Emre Can shouldn't be in the side because he moves the ball too slowly. When he's got too much time on the ball, he moves the ball slowly. Teams can get in, get set, and it's not doing us any favours.
I'll come back to that in a minute, because I have a theory on this one as well. Go on.
Okay, no problem. Yeah.
He's fat.
With Henderson, he moves the ball very quickly. He can change the direction of the ball. His range of passing, for me, is a little bit better. So what he always tries to do is create overloads on the wing. And now we've got two pacey wingers. We can go either way and get teams stretched. That said, like the example you gave for Chelsea, I think the two of them can work together. Emre Can is the most physical player that we have. They're both specimens, but Emre likes to mix it. I'm not convinced that Henderson likes to mix it.
The thing that separates Can and Henderson for me the most is how much better Henderson is at recycling the ball, how much quicker he is on the ball, how much more responsive he is to the ball dropping in the middle and him coming in and cleaning. Like you said, Can, physical battles, big games at home in the league, in Europe this year, away and at home. He will be perfect for us. And they're not the games we struggled with. The games we struggled with is, like you said, when teams are sitting off, Henderson just knocking balls down the channels, causing uncertainty. That's what we're going to need. Yeah. And I think, like you said, this whole fucking Chan, Henderson, which camp you're in, like, we need to just get rid of that idea coming into this season, because I think we're going to see a lot of rotation and there's going to be people pissing
them. Yeah, well,
I think
that camps thing you're talking about, yeah. I don't think Klopp is in a camp there.
No.
Oh, he doesn't give a shit.
No,
the only camp Klopp was in is probably Euro camp with the kids. Having a great holiday before the pre-season started. Did you like
with his umbrella hat?
No,
we're talking about camps. I'm not going to go. Anyway, come here. So I think it's too easy, isn't it? To carry on from what you were saying, I think about picking player horses for courses, yeah? I think rather than up to maybe this season, or last season and the season before that, we were picking players, we were picking teams maybe to be the exact opposite of the other team, or we were picking our team to kind of nullify the opposition force and then play our game. I think we could be in the position this season where we can pick a team to dominate the opposition from the beginning rather than nullifying them and then taking it. So I think it puts us in a better position completely. I think we're going to be on the front foot constantly rather than feeling not trusting ourselves as much as we should do, and I think anyway.
Yeah, I think that there'll be similar to last year. I think there'll be teams he picks like against the top teams. Like, I think this idea that Klopp has only no plan B is a ridiculous thing. I think he does have a plan B, but they're all just very attacking plan Bs. But I think like last year against the big teams, it was always Firmino up top because he's the most like defensive of our attacking players, and I think that's why he played Chan a little bit further up as well. So he plays him ahead of Henderson. And then that puts another kind of slightly defensive player in attacking position, but still in a, like, so you're putting slightly more defensive players further up the pitch.
Yeah, man.
Going from the front.
Yeah. But it's still a very attacking formation, but he has slightly more defense, so it's tweaked a bit. Yeah. But I think the addition of Salah, the addition of Mane on either wing, gives us more options then against teams who are lower down, which was our problem last year. We had no problems really against the top teams. So I think what it means is that we don't have to necessarily run the lads ragged against the lower teams, which means that they are less good then later on. And also means that we have that toolkit there to get in both situations.
That's the point I was trying to make there. Hopefully the personnel we have going into the season is capable of dominating the lower teams from the whistle, you know what I mean? Rather than kind of feeling ourselves.
If when Chan plays, we kind of invite them on a little bit because he does seem to fucking daddle on the ball in the middle a little bit, and it gives teams time to get up. Whereas Henderson, like, for want of a better term, he's like a quarterback. Like, when he gets on the ball, teams are like, he can spray his range of passing. He can hit either left back or the right full, charging up the wing, 60 yard diags, and they're going to get in behind. Where is it?
Hell over 60 yard.
Okay. Here's another idea I have that may not come to fruition, right? So, I've been a big one to say about we need two centre backs. We don't need to sign just one centre back, but we need two centre backs, right? What if he's looking at the powerhouse that is Emre Can, and he's thinking to himself, actually, against muck teams in Anfield,
I put him in.
Effectively go through. I know what you're saying.
Centre back.
Yeah,
that's madness. Yeah.
And let him drive.
The only thing is, the only thing is if he was third or the wide of the three centre backs, he did get exposed a little bit with his pace getting out to a pacey winger.
He'd be the central.
That's what I was going to say. So if they were to do it, let him step in, get the ball, drive out with the ball.
So you're saying,
like Gerrard kind of did for a bit, where he dropped deep into the centre-back role.
So instead of the idea of the centre midfielder dropping in and the two centre-backs splitting, you effectively have a middle centre-back who steps into midfield.
It's very Pep Guardiola, this, isn't it?
Yeah, but listen, Craig. Hold on. We're not Brazil from 1972.
We're not Brazil from 1972.
Hang on.
We're not Brazil 1972, Neil. Nobody's saying that. But we're saying when we're playing the likes of fucking next year, Huddersfield at home or Brighton at home, when we will be the technically superior team, that'll be the ideal game to have him in.
It's not that long ago that Swansea beat us 3-2 at home. I was at the match. I'm still scared.
We played the same system that day.
I just fundamentally disagree with us going 3 at the back at any time.
Klopp banged that drum fucking until it burst last year. He did try to play the same system for that. And I said it on the pod, it was one of the first pods I was on. You can't expect to have, there's 38 league games in the season. you're not going to get away with using the same system every week.
No matter who you are.
And that's what he did, Troy.
But I will say, lads, when we had to turn things around, when our backs were against the wall and Champions League was fading away, right?
He did
change things. We played three at the back. We started changing up how...
Wasn't it a complete clusterfuck the first time it happened?
No, but you can't... But Neil, you can't say it was a complete clusterfuck when you do something that you've never done before, because when he played it the next time, it worked.
But didn't we do it at half-time? I can't remember systems. The match. Yeah. We did it at half-time and then we scrapped it immediately.
We didn't scrap it immediately.
We did at half-time, we did.
We've used more systems in pre-season this year.
Look at the last season, not to harp on about it because we've covered it a lot, I think... In the first half, he was able to field what he felt was his system with his players, and we looked fucking brilliant. It's arguably the best I've seen Liverpool since the
Rodgers. Was out of the bottle, though, wasn't it? After a couple of months.
So then what happens? We lost a couple of key players, and then we had to, because we haven't got enough squad depth, we had to become a team that wins ugly because we didn't have pace, so we had to find another way of grinding out results. That... To be able to have that mentally now in the back pocket that we can go to these places with a different setup, let's say a West Brom away, and grind out a result. The lads have that in the back pocket. I would not be surprised to see us move to a three at the back. I've said it a couple of times on the pod. I think if we bring in a Van Dijk, I think we absolutely have the players to quite comfortably convert to a three at the back. If you have Van Dijk likes to step out with the ball, so you could do that same theory then with Cham, but with Lovren and Matip either side of Van Dijk, and Van Dijk will quite happily step into midfield.
To go again with that point is we've fullbacks now who are capable of playing that role with Robertson and Trent.
Would nearly prefer it.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? The back when I play wing backs.
Well, again, I'll go back to your point. If you're doing that, then you may as well keep Moreno if you're going to start using wing backs because not necessarily. You're looking at then a different type of setup and a different type of player that you want to play in a wing back.
I think Robinson is just a better Moreno in that he's got good delivery. He's got a brain.
I'm going to hold back on that, right? Because when we saw Moreno, he was a better Enrique, and it turned out that he was the same.
I agree.
When
we signed every left back ever for the last 20 years, he's a better than something. And actually, none of them have been better than either Rob Jones or even Marcus Ballard was probably the last.
I was like, a real left back. Moreno, a real left back. Do you see what? Like, fucking marauding up, bang, goal. Yeah. And then just went to show.
What I want to see from a fullback or a modern fullback now is somebody that's comfortable on the ball, can go on the outside, can put a quality delivery into the box, and is defensively aware. Moreno doesn't tick a lot of those boxes for me, whereas Robinson, in what I've seen of him, is very comfortable going on the outside. He can come inside. He's got a good cross into the box. He does need to work a little bit on his defending, but that'll come. And especially if you've got somebody, let's say, of a Van Dijk profile alongside him, he'll walk him through the games and help him.
I think being calm enough as well to turn back around and just lay the ball off at the midfield is a massive part as well, because generally with fullbacks that are attacking fullbacks, they haven't got that.
It doesn't always have to be a fucking... Yeah. You don't always have to split the team. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I'll tell you just kind of feeding off what you were saying, Jake, the fact that you were saying that us grinding results out towards the end of last season gives us this kind of mental resilience. Yeah? Mm-hmm. I think what I really would have loved to see or hope does happen in this transfer window is I know it's a massive cliche, but we buy someone who's won some shit.
Someone who knows
how to win shit. You know what I'm saying? Listen, we have a modicum of it, and we have a bit of it now that we have the
Asia trophy in the bank.
But you know what I'm saying? If you could buy two lads, even if they're in their 30s, it doesn't matter as shit.
Phil made a point actually around centre, because he said last week or a couple of weeks ago when I was last on that he wanted us to get two centre backs. So yeah, okay, you go balls to the wall for a Van Dijk. But then, for example, if you look at someone like a Pepe, Pepe is a winner. A
born winner,
horrible, horrible twat who can teach those around him the dark art of football that are going to see out those games where it's 1-0 away from home with 10 minutes to go. He doesn't give a bollock.
We're going back 10 years maybe when United were perennial winners. Yeah, now they got their nose in front in January and you said the league's over now because these boys are just going to grind out. They're not going to be impressive at all, really, from now
until they get the job done.
But they are going to win the league.
But we did, though, didn't we?
Drag them across the line if he has to.
It's a good point, though, Jay. I don't think there's enough being made over how we ground out games last year towards the end. Like, from the City game on, I think it was New Year's Eve on.
The Aston Villa team was a big deal too, wasn't it?
There was a few 1-0s there.
And it was the games where we lose them.
We won 2-1 at Stoke away, but we were 1-0 down. Palace at home, we smashed Palace away, didn't we?
Yeah.
Who else was that? West Brom away.
No, but the Palace thing you're saying, that's a banana skin.
Yeah.
And we
you're going to get it. You're going to have
Watford
them.
Away.
Watford
well.
Away was another 1-0. So I think we did grind it out. And then the West Ham, I think everything clicked. That
there's someone around the place now who's been through the Champions League. Not, he doesn't have to win it, but has been in it for the last 10 years. Like Pepe is. I know we're not going to get him because I think he's signed for somebody else, but he's the perfect example of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it would have been nice.
To a lesser extent. It Gary McAllister nice. When he came back to yeah. Liverpool that time.
But I think
to Klopp, that type like, of impact I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying?
Them players are easier to bring in when you have sort of a more complete squad. When you're yeah. not when you're not
oh, yeah,
building
just
a team,
an addition to a squad as opposed to someone who's
when
reliable,
you're building.
You know what I mean? But
yeah,
I think it's something we.
I
really,
think Klopp wants to get the core in now that as what he could see, and I think that's why not to bang the fucking the drum. Keita is obviously a player he loved to base his team yeah. around. Salah and Mane, and then obviously Van Dijk, and that's a spoil.
Just think,
you know,
we're missing a beat this year if we don't get someone like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree.
I think Klopp is a person who's done that though. Like there was a point at which last season where if Chelsea hadn't set an unbelievable record-breaking points total, we would have been in top of the league with a record-breaking top points total.
Yeah,
and that was when we were hitting every single stride.
We would have
that attack.
Yeah,
that,
we nice. Were just absolutely cutting through people, and I think like. I don't think there's enough made of like the fact that when Klopp was in Germany, he beat that Bayern Munich team. They were in a downward lull for that small period, but that was he broke records, played made unbelievable football, unprecedented football, mm-hmm. really. Changed the game in Germany in a way that's not even gone back. It's still the way the Klopp left football in Germany is still the predominant mode of football over there. And like I think the intangibles the Klopp brings in terms of signings, in terms of motivation, in terms of the way the team's set up, and just in terms of every week the team going out to kill people.
He has to get his way though, doesn't he, this year, like this summer?
He has to get his way
because he's an egomaniac.
Everyone has to be the egomaniac if you're in charge though.
Yeah, but who's not?
Is he not earned the right?
Has
he earned the right at Liverpool? Absolutely not.
No, listen,
he's won fucking nothing.
Nilo.
He's got his back in the top.
It doesn't matter. He don't win anything. Nilo. It's Liverpool, mate.
4 years.
Yeah, but look, this Liverpool conversation is an awkward one because we exist to win trophies, but we haven't fucking won any. And we haven't been getting top four, so you have to be realistic and say top four.
My point is you're saying he's an egomaniac, yeah?
Yeah, well maybe
the top six teams last year. Pep. Wanker, trying to reinvent the wheel. Yeah. Mourinho, no words needed. Poch is all right. Klopp.
Poch got an all right.
He is sound.
Poch is all right. You can't say much about Pochettino because he doesn't give away much.
Yeah.
Klopp is fucking, he's the charisma. A lot. If you're looking from the outside in, you think, look at that fucking gobshite. But we've all warmed to him.
Yeah.
Right? Well,
but most of us.
The thing is, he's like, they're all the same and you need a bit of that about you. You do need that about you. You look at Pep Lloyd coming in. What are you buying Danilo? This is a prick.
My example trying of what to reinvent I would say about Klopp was last season hit the bottom standard that I expected us to achieve last season was fourth and we got it.
And we've done it.
And listen, we got it. Yeah, but that's all. We've just achieved the base standard.
But you have to be realistic
at the same time.
To use a stupid football cliche, we haven't wanted to cut down any trees or something.
Yeah, but he overachieved.
Yeah, but Neil,
he didn't.
If you look at the squads we were up against, on paper, we were probably the sixth best squad.
It doesn't matter.
But of course it does.
He set the standard for us. He said he wants to finish in Champions League this year, and that's what he did.
Yeah.
And that was
But he's not going to come out and go, well, realistically, lads, we're going to be up against
it. Well, he said we're going to win the league in 2019.
Look,
we could still.
You look at it, right, as a foundation, as a minimum, and Steve-O said it in the pod, and he's right, we should be getting fourth. That's the minimum.
Yeah,
and we achieved the minimum. But if we're probably being a little bit more realistic, we had the sixth best squad. So if you look at the tools that he had to work with, we probably overachieved a little bit.
We definitely did.
That's why we pay him all that money, because he is expected to overachieve.
So that's what I'm saying. He's earned the right now to turn around to FSG and say, get me him, and him. I want this. I've got as much as I can out of this group. They all still want to play for me, but I need help. We've got more competitions. Give me the money and I'll take you on to the next level.
I hope he achieves. I really, really do. Cool. I just don't get the love in. He can do no wrong in anybody's eyes. I just can't understand.
You've been on bashing this bus for the whole thing.
That's
sorry.
It's true.
It's not bullshit.
Yeah,
it is. It's absolute bullshit.
It's
not bullshit. I've been listening over there and it's just crap, right?
No,
listen, any fella that's done what he's done deserves the adoration that he gets, right? Now, the problem is that we have at this moment in time.
How can you say he deserves to be adored?
Because
that's
he does.
That's a ridiculous thing to say.
He's taken a shit team and achieved something. Right,
no,
I'm sorry.
That's what he was expected to do.
No,
he's only done what he was expected to do.
No,
yeah, that's it.
He hasn't.
He was expected to finish fourth last season. And
he's expected to win a league. in the course of 5 years.
Yeah, this
he is building to what he is building towards achieving that goal. You don't go except in the complete once in 20 years occasions when it's Leicester or something like that, and that happens. And that happens once in a generation across every league in Europe.
That's right, they're making a movie about it.
But this is this is a fella who's put a plan in place, who's almost who could have achieved it in his fourth season, which would have been ahead of plan. He's achieved it as he set out to do it in the second season, right? And now this season, he is going to he's looking at it and saying, right, I need to put to replicate that top four finish. I need a good run in the Champions League, and I need a trophy.
Yeah, right? I agree wholeheartedly with you.
And then he's looking at saying, if I do that, and I can continually get and I can put this team back in the Champions League to do back to back Champions League qualifications, which we haven't done in since 08-09.
Yeah. Right? No, yeah.
Then again, he can go back into the transfer market, and there's more belief in the players that the approach that this fella has something and is going to achieve something. Yeah. There's more belief going in to say, okay, looking at Spurs and looking at the whole thing, it doesn't happen. You don't become title challengers overnight.
I wasn't expecting us to.
No,
my whole point
but to turn around and say that he's a myth
is,
and it's bullshit,
I'm not
it's crap.
That. I never said that. All I'm saying, what I said was he's just fulfilling the mandate he set out for himself, and that's all he's doing and nothing more than that. Yeah, and to say he can do no wrong,
if he wins the league by 2019,
wrong.
Would that be just him fulfilling the mandate he set out for himself? That'd be an absolutely amazing achievement.
Yeah.
But
of course it would, yeah.
But then you
just say, when he was supposed to.
Listen,
that's
if he does win the league in
2019,
it'll be absolutely
when you wake up in the morning, is your first word bah, followed by humbug.
And that's coming from Phil.
And then you go and take one coal out of the fire to see if
get the van out. Get the van out.
You can't just sit around here and have a clap appreciation. He's fallible like everybody else.
He's having a reach around. But that's not what you're saying. The fans are all obsessed. The fans are warming to him. He's Jurgen Klopp. Even when he was at Dortmund, everyone loved him. Even,
he has charisma.
I was a neutral fan looking at Dortmund.
I just think football fans...
I only
fans,
started watching the German league because I watched Dortmund.
Football fans are mad. They think there's elements of it's football manager, right? So we've got a problem there, problem there, problem there, problem there. Throw all the money, that's it, job done. Klopp has to do a couple of things, right? In the real world, he has to manage the players that he currently has in his squad. They have to buy into what he's trying to do. They have to play for him. If he's just buying people willy-nilly everywhere, buying better players all over the place, those players aren't going to buy into what he's going to do. So he has to prioritise different areas in the pitch each season. Last season he did in Wijnaldum and Mane and Matip, and they made a massive difference to Liverpool. This season, he's looking at bringing in another centre-back and another centre-midfielder and a wide man. He is literally building, step-by-step, a squad that will, in 2-3 years, I have no doubts, be competing consistently at the top of the league. It's just going to take us a little bit of time. But at the moment, he's fulfilled the minimum requirement that he's set out. He's done it in a style that has got people warming to him. When players were fully fit, it was arguably the best football I've seen us play in years. So that gives us reason to be excited that this guy's at the helm of our club and he's going to take us on to the next.
There's the other side of it as well.
Sorry, Jay. You had me a hello.
There's the other side of it that's visible as well. And although they haven't happened yet, and I'm sure like Phil is a realist. Dave, I'm not too sure. Me, I'm more of a realist now myself. Jamie's an optimist. And Neil, I don't know what the fuck you are.
Depends on what day it is, mate.
If you look at Van Dijk, if you look at Van Dijk and Keita, can anyone here say that neither of those players don't want to play for Klopp?
Well, I can't say they can either.
Well, I could.
I think that's probably what's true, the persistence.
I reckon they definitely both do.
They can't call me a realist and then turn around and say that to me and expect me to turn around and say.
No, but I think they definitely both do.
Well, I think that's what
I think Van Dijk definitely. I don't know about Coyler, to be honest.
Van Dijk has met him and got a stick of rock and everything else. He definitely wants to. He's taking himself. This fella's definitely paid for it and the Waller and everything.
For us to keep going after these two players, we must have got wind of something that would indicate.
We've got wind on, right?
Oh, there he is.
Yeah, it is breezy and Blackpool in fairness.
On the Big Dipper.
Whether it's agents talking or the player making noises, we have been told or it's been implied that they want to join Liverpool Football Club. Van Dijk is now going on strike and he's basically said that he only wants to join Liverpool.
Exclusive.
So, exclusive.
Yeah. Virgil van Dijk is on strike. He's doing a dirty protest with Keita on top of the Red Bull training building.
It's deadly. Yeah. The two of them are drinking Monster.
Monster. Lamping Monster.
You have to laugh this absolute soap opera of a chance here when that, don't you? Because that's what it is. Like, you actually couldn't write this.
We went off the match. I did want to cover one thing on the match, right? That I don't know, has to be much focus on or whatever. But the fact that Karius played in the final as opposed to Mignolet, the fact that, going back to your point where they're being drilled to play very rapid counter-attack football, right?
Sweeper keeper.
Yeah. And look, he has his deficiencies. He's not as good as Mignolet in crosses.
He's lightning off as well.
But he's lightning in terms of coming out behind him, and he's also lightning in terms of distributing the ball.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Now, the one thing that
there was a couple of rugby moments as well. Now,
that was the worst thing. Straight to your, if your man had a first touch, that was
terrible. Terry dropped the ball.
It's the microscope again, isn't it? Like every keeper makes mistakes, but we don't play for Liverpool, so we don't pick up on them.
It's weird. You look at how much Mignolet in areas improved last season, but there's still something about Karius that has me warming to him, because I think he'd have a bigger impact on
gorgeous.
How we play.
Because he's gorgeous.
He's absolutely beautiful.
Well, he went out and bought a bandana the exact same as his.
Is that what you're going for?
Yeah.
Are you going to go with the top, like the top knot that he had there as well?
No way. You're going all retro Nilo on me.
you didn't have the bandana though.
You'd be like Nilo last year. You're like you're going to Wes in 2005.
That's more Cher Lloyd than fucking Lawrence Cardi.
That's his wanking bandana.
No, he looked like that. No, he underseed.
He does actually.
When he has that at home, his missus goes, "We must be heading upstairs for a wank."
Keep the hair out your eyes so it doesn't get sticky.
This shit can go anywhere, man.
Do you know what's weird? Like
Phil's bandana.
But that's standard Phil. To go on a bit of a tangent, I think people are making a little bit too. This is just my personal opinion. Now, open it to the room to attack me if you don't agree. I actually think that people...
I don't agree with you!
There he is. I actually...
Ulster says no.
I think people are forgetting how good we were when everybody was fully fit last season.
I think people are forgetting how shit they were.
I think... No, when everybody was fully fit, that we were absolutely superb last season. We were on an unbelievable run, right? To that squad, Henderson is back and fully fit. Massively important to how we play. Coutinho's fit. Lallana's fit. We've added a left back who can give us proper width and delivery. If you look at this team now and you look at the positions and say, okay, where do we need to strengthen? Centre back for me is the key. Yeah. I would be perfectly happy going into this season if we only signed Van Dijk now.
Oh, fuck that.
And look at that team. The problem is the number of games we're going to be playing. Yeah, but if you're looking at Mane coming back, Salah, Firmino, a fit Sturridge, a fit Henderson, and Van Dijk marshalling in that defence.
The thing is...
And he looks bright. I think make an impact.
I understand what you're saying, but you said two things there, one after the other. A fit Sturridge and a fit Henderson. Yeah. Two players that since they've come into Liverpool haven't really been reliable.
No, that's fair. But if you look at Sturridge last year, I was quite surprised. They reckoned that he was actually fit
for more games than the game.
So whether Klopp's turned around to him and gone, have a rest this season. Let's get you right for next. If Sturridge then does appear to be getting injured again, I mean, he looks razor sharp so far and he's been taking a full part in pre-season. If you get a fully fit Daniel Sturridge, that's a 30 million striker that we brought in.
Like we are talking about Klopp and his progression, there's still too many ifs.
Yeah, see, I don't think that he's purposely resting him him. I think he's resting him because he's made of crisps and he knows that he's going to break.
He's made of
Farley
Jusks. Yeah. Already said to the sports science team, make him okay. Take him out of the spotlight and make him okay next season. Build him up, do whatever you need to do.
I love the idea of a sports science team.
Captain America.
Yeah. You know, like in a scientist coats, except they have the crest on them and all that. Well, who are you, sports scientist? You know, like your man Beaker. Except the Liverpool jersey on him.
Robbing the fucking living.
But if we do get Daniel Sturridge back firing and we're able to keep Henderson fit, they are two players that are going to make a massive difference.
Do you agree that they're massive ifs?
Yeah, of course. And that's because we haven't got anything else to go off and
you've really small hands. That's creeping me fucking out now, man. You know that?
I'd say it looks yellow, does it?
I've got a bit of an issue.
Yeah, they're melting me.
The well, so I'm going balls with small hands. It's a good job I've got a massive cock in it.
You've got small hands. Your cock is tiny.
That is not true. Thank you, sir.
And he's in really big balls too.
Yeah, thank you for that, Neil.
How about I mean?
It's a good job of not going to get a complex coming out of this place, isn't it?
Yeah. Tiny balls, which makes you really look bigger.
You've got tiny balls?
Yeah.
You've been getting a fair bit recently,
Big sack, man.
Can we go back to talking about sports scientists, please?
If we are able to get Daniel Sturridge fit, that's a 30 million striker that we brought in. Mane's back fit. That makes a massive difference, and he's going to be there for the season.
In an ideal world, these players are fit for 90% of the season. That doesn't work like that, especially when you're playing more games. We need a big squad, Jay.
Agreed, but then...
just to say, you'd be delighted. We'd be happy if you just got Van Dijk. That's fucking mad, man.
Yeah, but that's Van Dijk. That's Robinson. That's Solanke, who's another body. That's Henderson's fit. That's Mane's back. That's Salah. Yeah, but that's a lot of players.
It's three new signings, though. It's true. We need a five.
But Sturridge in a way is a new signing.
We do.
Yeah, but Sturridge in a way is a new signing, no? And then you look at Trent. That's another body that realistically can come into this side and make a difference.
I'll go as far as saying, if you got Van Dijk, I wouldn't give a bollocks about not getting Keita. Whereas if you got Keita and didn't get Van Dijk, I'd probably be a bit pissed off.
Well, we need a centre half.
Yeah.
So let me throw it at you then. If we get Van Dijk and Chamberlain, how do you feel?
I still feel we need one more.
Really?
Honestly, I really do.
In what position now?
Just somewhere.
A body.
Just a body.
Yeah, but
just
if you look at
it... And that's why I've seen... And we can forget about Chamberlain now because that's completely died. That looks like it's not going to happen. Dead in the water. But the thing is with Chamberlain, and why I thought it made sense was, he can play
wing-back
forward, he can play in the middle, and he can play wing-back. And that's what I mean about having more bodies there. Like, just to say, if you just get Van Dijk, that's just fucking taking it because
Milner's
it's been dragged out. If we had assigned Van Dijk before all the show happened and nobody after that, you'd be fuming. It's just because it's dragged out and it's felt like it's been taken away from us and that we've been hard to get him. It felt like a real fucking catch. But we need bodies. We need squad depth.
I'm
and that's what killed us
last Van Dijk thing now. At the start, I was very like, oh, I don't know, but Van Dijk's a bit out of money. But then, like, Who are the other top centre backs?
There's none. No, there's none.
And you've got to remember, mate, as well.
I agree with you there, mate, because we're not saving it for fucking Christmas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They spend a fucking few.
Definitely.
If you want them and you're 70 minutes, just spend 100.
About Liverpool and centre backs, Phil alluded to it before, is our system, there's not many centre backs that can come into our system and play to a top level. Whereas Van Dijk has the traits, i.e., he's unbelievably rapid in 1v1s. So if teams do clip a ball down the flanks or get him behind, you'd be very confident that he'd be able to recover.
He's dominant.
Dominant in the air.
And it can't be set far.
Very comfortable on the ball. Yeah. So if you get him exposed, he's going to be perfectly fine if it's 1v1. So if he has the traits that you need to slot right into our team now, pay the fucking money and move on to the next player.
Yeah.
But that said, just to go back to the point about the size of the squad, if you're looking at a starting 11, right, of let's say Klein, Milner, Van Dijk, Matip, then you're going to have, it could be anyone, right, but we'll just go Henderson, Lallana, Coutinho is a three,
yeah.
And then you have Salah, Firmino and Mane, right?
Well, for me, the idea of just the best 11 is...
Oh, yeah, no, it is. Yeah,
because your best
that.
11 but it depends on who you're playing.
I agree completely.
It could be, your best 11 should be different most weeks because...
I'm just doing it to highlight... I totally agree. I'm just doing it to highlight the depth of quality that we would have. So of those not picked, if we just sign Van Dijk, you're then going to have an Emre Can. You're going to have Wijnaldum. You're going to have Robinson. You're gonna have Lovren.
Stick on him, Robinson.
That's a lot of players that you're gonna have on the bench, and that's players that are gonna miss out on even getting on the bench. Good players that are gonna miss out. So that I just think you bring in two or three more.
How are there gonna be good players missing out on the bench? We had like massive games last year where we had teenagers making up most of the bench with just two or three injuries.
That's because players have come back. So, but players have come back fit. We brought in a couple more. You've got the emergence of people like Trent. So on that team that I just picked there, or that squad, you wouldn't have an Origi even on the bench. You wouldn't have a Trent on the bench. You wouldn't have then a Woodburn. These are good quality players that aren't even making the bench.
Ben Woodburn is not a quality player yet. He's 16 years old.
He's been fucking great in preseason.
Yeah, but he hasn't. I think what Dave was getting at is that he's had no real effect for us.
Yeah, like, exactly. If we have a Champions League game on the Wednesday and we're coming into the Sunday, we need to rotate players.
Chelsea, City, I know you're going to be bringing 16, 17 year olds.
No, but these, I just mentioned that there's somebody that's not even on the bench. So you've got a Clavan's not on the bench, Origi's not on the bench. Trent is not on the bench.
Them two are shit. You do know that, Jay, don't you?
But they're not even making the squad.
Because they're no good, mate.
they shouldn't be making the squad.
No, but they were starting for us last year. That's my point. They're not making the squad in the squad that I've just given them.
Yeah.
They're not making the squad.
No,
but they were starting for us last year.
So, Jay, your whole point is the crap players aren't going to play this season.
Yeah. If we only bring
nice one, man. Only the good ones.
You're all white.
that is true. That's the truest thing of the whole thing. Look. There's been lots of talk and lots of things around rail seating and all that type of stuff in Anfield. I want to put my position forward here clearly, right? One, I think every ground in England should have rail seating in it, right? I think safe standing should be brought back in. I think going to a football match, if you've gone to a football match where you've stood and you've gone to a match where you've sat, you'll know that the atmosphere is about 10,000 times better than it is sitting down, right? It's just much more atmospheric.
It's a different experience.
Yeah, it's you feel much part of the game, and it's more conducive to jumping around and singing and that type of stuff that you want in the
atmosphere. And it looks great, is it?
When it comes to Anfield, I know there's a lot of the issues because of Hillsborough and everything like that. But like as far as I'm concerned with the Hillsborough thing, that was poor policing. Now listen to me, Neil. And this is where I stand on it. The disaster was caused by poor policing, right?
Yeah, man.
A ground that didn't have a safety certificate and where a semi final should never have been held, right? And also, it was a cover up. At the end of the day, right? It was the pen system that the English government had put into place around football grounds that created pens in the first instance. The pens are gone, right? The rail seating is safe. The way they do it is safe.
Yeah.
And it brings atmospheres back into the ground. And it's proven to be safe. So from a safety, that should allay people's fears. And, you know, the club are going about it the right way. They've engaged with the spirit of Shankly. They're doing a poll and they're engaging it the right way. But that's my own personal point of view. I want to see it brought back. The other bit that I want to also see happen is if they do decide to go with it, right? I want everyone that has a season ticket in the cop ripped up, right? I want them to go to the lads to go to the away games. I'm not saying that you lose your season ticket, right? I want them to go to the lads who go to the away games. And I know people say
the lads are going to generate atmosphere, basically, as well.
No, yeah.
Youngsters as well.
I know they say it's a click and all that type of stuff, but I don't care. Those lads that go to the away games make huge noise, make huge sounds, and make a great spectacle. And people are always going on about how amazing the travelling cop is and the whole lot. Grant, I want that travelling cop behind the goal in the cop, right?
Man.
I don't care. And I'm a day tripper, and you, Neil, you are, and we all are, right? And I go to Anfield for the spectacle. I don't go to look at the cop be quiet for 70 minutes of the game and sing You Never Walk Alone twice and the Stevie Gerrard song.
I'll be honest with you. Or when my young lad was shouting that, lad's giving him a look.
Yeah,
because he was shouting.
Yeah, yeah. I think the biggest obstacle I want
the travelling cop behind the goal. You want
travellers in Anfield.
I want that noise. I want that spectacle. I want what the cop is renowned for is that noise and the singing. Yeah. There's always quiet spells in games, no matter what part of Europe in this always. But what they do is they put their ultras behind their home goal.
Yeah, man.
They put the ultras behind the home goal, and that's where it is. And if you have a seat in the cop, you say, look, here's the situation. We are building an ultra section. The cop is going to be the ultra's stand, right? And the part behind the goal is, we know you've had that seat for years, but unfortunately the seat's going to move. Now if you don't like it, that's an unfortunate thing, but we are giving it a seat in another part of the ground.
The very same thing happened when the cop was seated. The people had the same place they stood every week, and then your seat is up on
I think that's the biggest obstacle. I was going to be tussling with those people who are in those seats that could be used for the railing system. And I think that's the only obstacle. I think once they talk them around to, like you said, giving up their season tickets and offering them something else, like an incentive or something, once we get that sorted.
Your insight, Jay, here be valuable. Yeah,
there is something in what Phil said there about the away supports, because I actually, me and all the lads used to prefer to go to the away games rather than the home games over the last couple of years when I was still at home. And like, I remember one game in particular, we went away to Stoke at the Britannia Stadium, and I think we had Kyriakos playing centre-back, Lucas Leiva in midfield. It was a 0-0 drab game. But it was one of the best atmospheres behind the goal because the club needed us. And I remember they walked off at half time, and the at Stoke you have to walk past the away fans, and they all applauded us, and we were cheering them off the pitch. You wouldn't get that at Anfield now. You get moans and groans, and you can see Klopp looking around the stadium when the team needs the fans, and the fans aren't there. So any mechanism that can create an atmosphere in Anfield, give youngsters a chance to get in the ground and make a noise and experience and build Anfield back to what it used to be, is definitely a positive in my book. I think the issues around the past, Phil said it perfectly, there was mass failings in the Hillsborough case, particularly around pens, gross negligence. I'm not going to go down that route now. You wouldn't have those existing in today's game. One thing I will say is a lot of people in the cop stand as it is.
Yeah.
And if you actually stand in the cop, it's dangerous because there's not much room to actually stand up.
Yeah, you're standing
on 6 inches,
mate.
There's actually a bit of a risk to fall over in front of the seat.
And onto somebody in front of you.
So you'd actually be more safe if you're going to stand like people are now, where you have the facilities to do so. You look at the impact that it's had at Celtic,
which is one of the most boisterous stadiums in the world. Prior to the rail standing, one of the most boisterous stadiums I've ever been in, and probably the best atmosphere I've ever experienced in a football match was Celtic and Rangers. And that was all seating at the time. And it was fairly boisterous. And the fact that it's succeeded there means he can succeed anywhere.
But it dropped off, I think, over the last few years. Celtic, the league had become a bit of a non-event, I think, after Rangers had dropped off.
But even if you look, if you're looking at Celtic games on the telly, this sounds like real fucking hypocritical because you're not at the game. But if you look at that corner in Celtic Park,
it's hopping.
It's rocking.
It looks fucking deadly, doesn't it?
Rocking.
Doesn't it look
it
deadly?
Does. And imagine that behind the goalie.
But I don't go to football matches. Everybody goes for different things. I don't go to football matches to be quiet. That's my release. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? When I'm at home, I'm a fucking dad, or I'm at work, I'm doing work shit, or whatever. You're always being something in each role of your life. When I go to football, I want to shout me fucking bollocks.
I don't want to sound like an elf later. I see these fucking things.
Yeah.
That's a big part as well.
For the listeners, that
people
would be
on
phone.
Their phones and the watchers or whatever.
Well, they can't because
people,
the camera's broken at this
people,
stage. So.
People on their phones.
It's not broken, it's just
people on their phones
stuff.
Is a fucking bad. Massive problem. It's a massive problem.
it's bad.
So come here. Well, then, right, the rail, standing or seating, whatever way you want to phrase it, what's going to prevent it from happening?
Again,
because I can't think of a good reason for it not to happen.
No, again, it's down to the clubs, right? And listen, Liverpool are going to be more conscientious of the decision that they make on this, right? Because of everything that's gone on in
the
past.
Well, the thing is, if Liverpool do it, everybody's going to say, it's okay for them, we're going to do it too. They're going to lead the charge. I would have thought, you'll see it proliferating all over the place soon as Liverpool.
Or it will work the opposite way around. What will happen is, if Liverpool don't do it, right, and other stands and other grounds do it, right, then they eventually will do it. When they see that it works and it works safely, and the families and the people who wouldn't be keen on seeing that happen in Anfield, then come around to the audience and say, actually, this is a good thing for the ground. It's a good thing for Liverpool Football Club, and it's good to see that atmosphere come back to Anfield, because what nobody wants is to see that there's, you know, this wonderful atmosphere going on all the grounds, and because Liverpool stay out of that pool, that you don't get the same atmosphere in Anfield. But it will only happen, and I'll go back to it. It'll only happen if the club also facilitate the people who make noise at matches being in one area in the ground.
Yeah.
You cannot create an atmosphere by dispersing friends and dispersing groups and the whole lot. You need they need to look at that part bigger. And I know FSG have tried to wrestle with the tickets and the pricing and all that type of stuff, but there is a bigger sell for them here. If they can turn the cop into a huge cauldron of noise again, right? And I'm talking about the cauldron of noise that we see before the United games, before the Merseyside Derby games, before the big games. And I've criticised this on the pod. Before the big games, the cop is rocking. When we were on run-ins and title challenges, the cop was rocking.
Oh,
right? The Dortmund game, it was rocking. What we need to see is to get those groups, get the travelling cop, make the travelling cop the cop.
Sorry, Phil, go ahead.
No.
I was just going to say, like, I think Liverpool also suffer from this. I don't know, it's hard to phrase this. People will probably fucking kick off, but everything's wool. Have you noticed, like, if the club try to do something new or embrace something new or try and generate an atmosphere, that's wool. Like, we don't do that. It's like we're stuck in the past.
Outsiders, I might feel alien.
Yeah, I think there's a very fine line between. Remembering your history, which I don't want us to lose our identity, but also catching up a little bit, because I think we fell a little bit behind.
The club is still playing catch up. Yeah. The fans need to play catch up to the reality that is modern day football. Yeah. And in that, even England needs to catch up. Look at Germany. And I'll say it all the time. I've been to games in Germany. Oh my God. It's noise for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? And people say it's not fabricated noise because of what they do. The back end, the goal behind the home fans, is where all the young people congregate.
Do you think that's down to simply pricing in that everyone
that it's accessible?
Jamie, that's what I mean. Because I don't think tickets to Liverpool are that accessible.
It's segregating. It's segregating your the most like fucking the busiest part of your support in one place where the one noise will resonate throughout the whole ground.
Again, one of the things is the ticket prices in Germany range. The people who are getting the cheap tickets are the ones, again, who are season ticket holders for that end of the ground, and they're incentivized because they know who they're selling to. Yeah. They know if you're going to the travelling cop, right? Say you go to them. Say we've 8,000. We know that there's 2,000 to go to these games. We know there's another 4,000 who are mad to get out and travel anyway and don't go to the games, but they're with the travelling cop to make the noise on the way to the games, right? And that becomes your cop, right? So they incentivise it for them to go in there and bring that atmosphere into the ground, because that atmosphere becomes contagious and everyone joins in. And the other three sides of the ground won't do it for 90 minutes, but that section does and that whole stand does. And you look at the Yellow Wall, you look at the Boyer Arena, you look at the Leverkusen's ground, you look at Schalke, right? And you look at the noise that's generated. Like, I think Ingolstadt might have been one of the noisiest grounds when they're in the Bundesliga as well. And you look at the smaller clubs that come up and the noise that their fans generate, because they just do it right. And I'm not saying that things can't be, that can't be done. It can, but it's going to take the club to make that decision. It's going to need a hard decision by the club. And I think for all,
they're going to need to knock a few noses out of joint.
Going to have to knock noses out of joint. But the people whose noses they're going to knock out of joint are not the people who are going to make noise in the ground.
Yeah,
they're the people
point.
Who aren't making noise in the ground. The only noise they're making in the ground is the ones that moan when Karius hits a miscued pass or Milner falls over for the 950th time and his cross hits the first defender. You know, that's who they're going to knock the noise out of joint. Because if you turn around and you say to the younger fans, we are giving you the cup. If you want to go in the cup,
it's yours now.
We want to go in the cup. You are going to have to be the noisiest person in this ground, right? And here's what we're doing. And because of that, see around the rest of the ground, it's going to piss people off. But there's 20,000 on a waiting list. We're going to bump up a ticket price. People aren't going to like this, right? But we're going to bump it up because we're going to cover the incentivization of putting a young, noisy support into that cup, right? And that will bring an atmosphere back, and it will give you a 90-minute atmosphere, and it changes the complexion of that thing. And if they're going to extend the Annie Road stand, you get the same people who are missing out back into the ground. You get the revenues in. You don't harm your revenue base, and you can still push on. But ultimately, and you know, I can see what's going to happen. I can see the negative comments. What do you know? You're not there. You don't live in the city. It's not your city. It's not. Well, I'm sorry. It's my fucking club as much as it's your club. Yeah, I've been supporting it for the same amount of time as you have. I've been to Anfield. I've sat there, and I've sat there disappointed as fuck that the cup has been quiet. I've sat there in Stoke games, bored off me bin, hoping that something will kick off and thing. And if you stand up, I've seen people stand up to try sing songs that aren't up in the singing section of the cup, and people looking at them like they've got two heads.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Yeah. I remember when we went.
The last Stoke game I was at was getting shouted at by the Stoke fans for trying to sing a song.
Yeah.
Like, really?
I was there on my own in the stand trying to start something.
Was that the 4-1 this season?
No.
The season just gone?
No, it was the 2. It was 1-0 when Brendan Rodgers. I've been over an age.
Sturridge.
Yeah. Sturridge got
that, yeah, it was weird because I went to the Stoke game the season just gone. And as I said, like, I'm ridiculously vocal when I go to the game. The noise was actually coming more from the main stand. It was actually more pockets of people wanting to sing in the main stand that were. And I was stood up looking around at the cop and I'm thinking, Why is nobody singing? I don't get it. And this was at a point when the team were 2-1, 3-1 up, and there was still nothing. It was kind of like they just expected to see results. They didn't come to enjoy themselves. It's like this really entitled.
I was at the Watford last year, 6-1, when we played some of the best football of the, and the atmosphere was shite. And I don't fucking take any pride in saying that. The atmosphere was geek. After every goal, it was a Liverpool.
You know the
for about 10 seconds, and that was it. There was no fucking Porsche girls or Tommy ringing around the whole ground.
You know
we were destroyed.
Really
we were blowing
it.
This team off the back.
Yeah.
And it was just, we won 6-1, but I left the game saying, like, what the fuck? Do you know what I mean?
Do you know what I find ironic about it all, right? Any of those people who are in the stadium watching the match that are real quiet and don't say boo for the 90 minutes, I know for a fact when they're at home watching Liverpool on the telly, they're fucking roaring at the telly. And I do it at the start of the second, and come on, Liverpool, for fuck's sake. And I know all of them people do it too. But there seems to be this culture that exists in Anfield. You can't say it when you're in there because.
There's a wall.
That's what I mean.
See, and I don't get that, mate. It's real alien, and it's real. There's a real disconnect then between the supporters, which is very hard for me to understand.
I think you've nailed it there, this disconnect with the club and the supporters at the moment, and it seems to be widening. But what I would say is I've been impressed with the steps that the club have taken of late to try and address that. So Tony Barrett's coming in.
Look at the noise.
That's what
you,
I wanted
did
to
you hear the
on.
Noise yeah. in Hong Kong?
Yeah.
Did you hear them in Hong Kong?
Yeah.
Fucking. Because they're all in one. It's all one. They were all obviously.
Made banners.
Local.
They were there.
95%
the Henderson banner was deadly, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? And the noise they generated. Like, do you know what I mean? So it's not that. The tourists going to the game can't make noise, because if you look at fucking that game the other day and the game in Sydney as well, like these lads need to that wall. But like we take for granted that we can travel on a flight to Liverpool for a half an hour. People go from Malaysia.
News flash. Bild have reported.
Oh fuck off.
Oh, yes.
Brackets.
Oh,
Bild.
Jesus.
Liverpool have submitted an €83 million bid. For Keita and not Griezmann.
So it's on Bild.
The balls on the table. I love it when Liverpool put the balls on the table. Come on, the
this
Reds.
Is not happening.
It's going to be
Hang on. I want to see the translation, because I'm sure at some point it's going
broken.
To say, in brackets, Griez.
Go on, the Grace. Go on, the Grace.
Tell you what. Quick enough, look.
I'm excited.
It's not true, Jake.
Oh, say what you want.
He's not bid that.
It's not at all. Why 83?
Stop, lad. Stop ruining me fucking bubble. We're going to sign him. We're going to win the league.
What happened was they saw him do that.
Jay, get your cock out. Jay, Jay, get your
novelty check.
I get so cold.
Jay, get your cock out of your hand.
Jay, get the St. Vincent de Paul and then huge cardboard ones.
Jay, put your cock away.
Right. And look, you know, this is breaking news, and we'll definitely cover it on the Tours and I podcast. Oh, we haven't said that yet. Anyway,
have
right,
you announced that yet?
Did I?
Did you?
I just tell people that would be doing that?
The cat's out the back.
What, the Tours and I podcast?
Yeah, we've been feeding it him in dribs and drabs. So we had the website. Tuesday interview.
There's more breaking news.
Din, din, din. Yeah, brackets so build. So tonight on build, it's saying Schnell und Fuvpillen in a Kolch and a Thursday Euro Trash show that will be starting for the start of the season. The day trippers are going with three shows a week. Right?
Three shows a week.
What was that? Three is the magic number. The Thursday show will be a little bit shorter because I'm not on it.
what was the hashtag earlier? Revenge and tackle.
What?
Oh, that was fucking great. Revanche and fell.
That's a very bad tackle on someone who's tackled you.
Revanche and fell.
German is a great language for football. It has there's lots of brilliant.
I love that word Schadenfreude. It's just deadly, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? It's a like great Schnell. Language. It'd be better if we all spoke German instead of English.
Ah well,
it nearly happened.
If you had your way, all the singing section would be speaking German.
I know, yeah. Be great, could you imagine?
Then again, they. No, Neil.
No.
Is that not part of
the No, Schnell. Schnell.
Don't shake the weekend. No, nearly
I've been very well behaved, thinking of
you. You have. I'm impressed.
One thing I need to do.
Right, so Trippers Chats, normally it's me talking absolute shite, but since I haven't bothered looking at the Twitter feed and also the Facebook feed, and by the way, if you're on there, it's Facebook.com/LFC Day Trippers, isn't that right, Jamie?
That's
you're
right.
Running that as well.
Yeah.
And Instagram, it's Instagram.com/LFC Day Trippers. Day Strippers, Day Trippers. That's the porn bot account is Day Strippers.
Sean
is running that. Hedge to all you guys out there on the Day Strippers account. And we've also got the YouTube channel is up, so go and subscribe to that because that will have the video things once we figure out all the technical things. That's why it's taking us a while to do and do our bits
so
and bobs.
Much going on. There
is so much going on.
Yeah.
And look, if all those sites are a bit much, it's all right. Because you can find them all in one handy spot.
There he is. Look at that.
And that is the www.lfcdt.com. We've even shortened the LFC Day Trippers down to LFCDT. So as you can spell it out, stick it up on it and stick the hide button on it for your work. There's lots of stuff on there.
Is available on the internet?
It is. It's all available on the internet. And if you're Syria, Syria will definitely find you.
Oh, yes.
Maybe not Syria, but that's your Syria.
Oh, okay. To your iPhone. Yeah,
into your iPhone. Or Cortana, if you happen to have a Windows phone. Some people have that shit, I don't know.
If you happen to be that unlucky.
If you've no mates, Cortana.
If you've an Amazon Echo, if maybe you live in the States or something, you can echo it as well.
I was just about to do an Australian accent there for some reason. You say if you live in the States, you've got to go, oh yeah.
G'day. G'day from Texas.
Oh yeah.
Right, so Trippers Chats, Phil.
Yes.
Here a couple, right. This first one is from...
This is your test as a host. Come on, Jay. You have to learn how to talk into the mic and read.
Right?
Okay.
And he asks on the Twitter, if you could have any exotic animal as a pet, what would it be and why?
We've been asked this question a couple of times. Many times, yeah. And every time I roll back to it, I myself would probably now, at this point in my life, go for an exotic pet. I think I'd go with a honey bear.
Oh, any particular reason why, Phil?
Well, if you need honey, they're going to have loads of it.
Going to have heaps of it.
You know, like honey?
Fella calls around to your gaff, and there's a giant bear in the corner. He's not going to mess around. He can say anything you want.
Shawnee?
Have to be a Toygo, wouldn't it?
Mike Tyson style?
Yeah, definitely. On a big chain out the back.
Everyone wants these exotic animals. Like, some of them are just...
I don't want an exotic animal. I don't even want a fucking dog.
But that's the question.
You know what I mean? I can't even remember to brush my teeth some mornings. How am I going to remember to feed a tiger?
Well,
unless
if you don't,
unless I'm the male.
I'll put it this way: if you don't, you'll soon find out.
Yeah.
Dave, what about you, lad?
Probably a panda.
Any particular reason?
Just handy, like leave it around.
The one thing about a panda is right that they've pretty much got no energy.
Yeah.
Right, so they're not going to attack you.
Are they lazy?
But no,
they won't even ride each other.
It's true.
What?
It's true.
They don't bang.
That's why. Hang on.
Pandas don't bang.
Hang on. Here's some scientific facts for the people out there. Right, the problem is with the pandas is they're joint. Right, they're victims of their own diet, so they only eat bamboo leaves. Right. which are low in calorific.
Which is a cult if you live in Clondalkin.
Yeah, which is low in calorific content. So do you see that mass? They're huge animals who live on bamboo, but can't move and can't do too much because the bamboo doesn't give them enough calorific content to give them the energy to get around. But their dietary system can only ingest and digest.
You surprise
bamboo.
Me every day with the amounts of useless information that
it's
you.
Why,
are
it's
able to
it's
pull
why
on.
It's why the gestation period for your average panda, I think, is 4 years.
You just make that all up?
Nope.
No. It's pretty impressive to be built.
You know, Balotelli tell me.
Practice next question. Book. Right. So
he knows all about pandas. He loves again. Them. His agents were out in Hong Kong during the week.
We have Carlo Donovan on the Twitter who says, if you were to get a bag of cans, what cans would be in said bag?
I'll tell you what they wouldn't be.
See the question there.
I'll tell you what they wouldn't be.
A bag of cans, right? When I was young growing up, a bag of cans, didn't matter fuck what cans were in it. Once there was a bag and they were full of cans.
Like a pick a mix.
My ma used to say to me, my ma used to call me Neil, bag of cans grey.
I actually have to get nappies on the way home.
Cans or Red Bull anyway.
Wings.
Tim asks, what fillings do you get in your chicken fillet rolls, lads?
Well, one, I don't buy chicken fillet rolls.
No, either way.
Yeah, well, I don't eat bread. Depends on whether it's a hangover one or
a good
work one. If it's a hangover one, I probably get butter and
some chicken.
Yeah,
that's an exotic
maybe
roll.
Maybe some lettuce. I wouldn't be feeling.
I'm a little bit disappointed there. I was expecting a little bit more.
If it was lunchtime, I'd probably get coleslaw.
You'll agree with me on this. Forget the chicken fillet roll, lads. If you want to get the best chicken sandwich around, go to Junior's.
Correct.
Down on Bath Avenue, right?
What a show.
The chicken fillet sandwich, right, that they have it's immense.
Down beside
the Aviva. Junior's. Spot. Half the Irish rugby team do, and the Leinster team, and the whole lot, they all lunch there as well.
And it looks great on Instagram. If you want to take a snappy at
it's immense. Junior's, it's on Bath Avenue. It's just behind Slattery's.
Is it Junior's on Bath Avenue, Phil?
Junior's on Bath Avenue.
They do a spicy chicken sandwich.
And I also want to recommend Polly's Pizza, which is actually its sister restaurant, which is just across from it. It's a lovely spot as well.
Yeah, sponsor of the pod there.
This isn't Love in Dublin, I promise. This is the LFC day trip.
Are we going risque?
Come on.
Milo's in, so we
come on. I seriously have to get nappies because I need nappies for the baby.
Right, and this is from the Hippo Clopamus on the Twitter.
Long time
who
fast.
Asks, if you could be a woman for 24 hours, what would you do?
Do you know what a fascinating... Well, actually, no, I'm
here
going
we
to
go. I'm fascinating. I want to be a woman, Finn. It's all revealing itself now, mate.
I was sitting there in the car the other day. I was just down... Oh, do you know
I'd love a pair of tits.
No. I've had them. I've lost them. I got them back again. I'd love to be out, like, just makeup.
No.
Whoa.
For the day.
You know, man, that sounds like so
you did that, though, randomly. Remember on WhatsApp he sent us fucking Captain Jack Sparrow with all his eye makeup on?
The eyeliner and everything.
Yeah, good looking board.
Am I?
No, if you were to be a 20-year-old board for 24 hours.
Does it make a difference?
Yeah, because if I was a good looking board, I'd just knock around to one of my mates' gaffs and let them knock spots at me for fucking...
Sean, just like, which one of your friends would you like to go around to?
I'm not home tonight.
I'd rock up the coppers, I'd pick the cunt in the fucking longest bootcut jeans and the Munster jersey, and I'd play and pay for room in the fucking Abbey Court Hotel up the road.
If you're not going to go tonight in a pair of fucking fishnets and a pair of high heels,
would it not be a safer bet to just do it to yourself rather than letting some guy in a GAA top fucking ride you?
Yeah, but look, I think women can have the crack with clothes and everything like that.
People are less judgmental.
Say that again, Phil.
Women can have the crack with clothes and stuff and wear mad things, and people are
you're
less
still
judgmental.
Still on the fashion.
I'm just saying it.
You
just
like think
it's all right. They can wear whatever they want on their head. Nobody pays any attention. Like, I'd go to a festival, they basically just go in a bikini.
Do you want us to comment on your headband? Is that what this is?
No, I'm just saying to go in a bikini top and a pair of shorts.
I'm going to paraphrase what has just been said there. Phil wants to wear makeup and Shawnee wants cock. Basically, because they said, what woman do you want to be? Shawnee just said, I want a male fella to ride me. And you never said what woman you want to be. You said,
I didn't say male.
If you could be a woman, what would you do?
If you get male on that, you could fill her out. You know what I mean? You may as well get it in your fucking, you know what I mean? Just take it where they go.
Right, so that's a wrap. So that was the podcast. There's a bit of video stuff. Apologies, we don't have the whole thing on video this weekend, but we ran out of disk space. So it's all a learning process for us at the moment. So you just have to bear with us while we figure it all out. As it was, so big thanks as ever to the Astral Park for letting us film here. Big thanks to our sponsors. Who's our sponsors this week? Church of Ireland, they're always great lads to do it. And also Juniors and Polly's Pizza throws a few bit of free food. And oh, by the way, Boojum, you need to up your standards. They're nowhere near as good as Pablo Picante. The heat level in the breed, that was just isn't good enough, right? Well, up your game, just had to say it, right? So big thanks for joining us in here tonight was, of course, Dave Hartree, Sean Lawson, Neil Gray and Jamie Holm, who has had to run home because his missus is locked out of his gaff at the moment. I bet you didn't think I'd put that on the pod now, Jamie. I bet you won't run off the next time you leave her standing outside, won't you? You will, yeah. So for me, Phil Casey, until next week, good night and God bless.
Starty, all right.
Starty there, Nidgy.
Listen, boys, all right? There's only one podcast to listen to, yeah? And that's the Liverpool one, yeah? The Day Trippers, yeah? I told Trish already, right? We can't make it out for the fucking match because it's the young fella's birthday, all right?
Johnny!
That is a little bit.
All right. Who's that meant to be again?
Deadly.